This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. It's Alex Barth and Bobby Krivitsky in for Anthony Pepe tonight, coaching his daughters of a softball game. And I don't know if they won or not. We'll try to get a score update for you soon.
I just hope after our discussion last week that they brought the K signs.
Right, because his daughter struck
just
out like how many?
Mowing people down.
Let's. I want to talk about the Kentucky Derby a little bit. Not because I like the Kentucky Derby. The Kentucky Derby, to me, is the most overrated sports, in air quotes, event. First of all, if the people competing don't know they're competing, it's not a sport. And
You don't think that any of the horses had trouble sleeping the night before the race?
They're horses. You know, I'd rather watch human beings accomplish some feat, whether it's basketball, baseball, hockey, whatever, accomplish like an actual feat they've trained their whole lives for versus horses. Like, they don't know why they're running. They're just running. So, and on top of that, you got to get all dressed up in uncomfortable clothes, drink. Like, it's really not a good drink, a mint julep. I don't know if you've ever had it. It's not great.
I can get down with a mint julep.
It's not in my top 15, top 20.
And no, it's a once-a-year thing.
Right, and it's 3 hours of build-up for 2 minutes, if you're lucky. Right? 2.5 minutes, maybe. I can't get behind it.
Anyone who's doing the build-up, I can't understand that at all.
But isn't that the whole part of the Derby is the build-up and the clothes and the standing around and taking pictures?
You can tune in 15 minutes before and get all that.
It's just celebrity prom with horses.
The coverage goes all day, but it's the same stuff all day.
I'll tune in and watch just the race.
Right. And here's the thing about the race itself. If I miss it, I'm not compelled whatsoever to go back and see what happened.
You know the beautiful thing? It's the only sporting event where it fits inside the entire 2 minute, 20 second limit of Twitter. I can just go on and find it on Twitter. So here, I love having this conversation every year, Bobby, because there's these one-off sporting events that are really bucket list. Kentucky Derby, Daytona 500. You get offered tickets to one of them. Which one are you going to?
I'm going to the Kentucky Derby because I'm more interested in watching it than watching a Daytona race, even though the tailgate is Daytona.
Give me Daytona. 4 hours, cars going fast, cold beer. I love it. All right, we're going to get into the NBA on the other side. Keep it here. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards Sports Map Radio Network. Alex Barth, Bobby Krivitsky in for Anthony Pepe tonight. Bobby covers for
Basketball Insiders.
Basketball Insiders,
NBA
the Boston Celtics. The NBA and the Boston Celtics. We got to talk about LeBron James because he made a couple of interesting comments over the weekend today. I don't know if they were together. I saw them both today. I was locked in on the draft over the weekend, so I might have missed one if he made it before. Which one? You want to start with the 100% comment or
Let's go there.
Okay, so LeBron James obviously missed, what was it, about a month and a half with a sprained ankle.
High ankle sprain.
Yeah, and he comes out today and says, I don't know if I'll ever be 100% again. I get the guy's 36, absolutely, you know, and what he's doing at that age is unbelievable. People have recovered from worse than high ankle sprain. I'm sorry. It's a little dramatic. And to me, it's setting up one of two things. Either age catches up to him and he declines and it's, oh, it all goes, the ankle sprain, like 3 years from now, we'll hear about the ankle sprain being the reason that he's missing shots, or he returns to form like he probably should, and all of a sudden, you know, ESPN gets to pump up, after he sprained his ankle late in the season, the heroic LeBron James made a gutsy comeback most could only dream of. Like, I'm sorry, dude. There's no surgery. There's no you sprain your ankle. You'll be, if you're not 100%, you'll be 99.
If him and Anthony Davis are healthy, they should still get to at least the conference finals
but the
favorites.
Is healthy 100%, Bobby, because he's not going to be 100%.
So you know that ESPN will pump up that storyline of LeBron James overcoming the ankle sprain.
We're going to get like a stat breakdown. LeBron James, when he was at 100%, and LeBron James not at 100%. And the numbers are going to be almost even, almost like he fully recovered from a sprained ankle.
You're going to hate this. I think it's actually indicative, in part. There are different attributes to ascribe to it, including, yes, he is being dramatic. That doesn't mean he's being wrong, though. I think that it is in the same vein as Tom Brady getting threatened by these understudy quarterbacks who have no chance, like a Ryan Mallett, to dethrone him. These guys, they want every competitive edge imaginable. They want to be at their best. And so I think LeBron James is rightfully concerned. That was a nasty ankle injury where he gets taken out from behind, gets clipped like a football play, high ankle sprain, 36 years old, with the mileage on the tires and the sport he plays. I think that he at least has every right to be concerned of how he's going to look moving forward and to be asking himself, even publicly, whether or not he's going to be at the exact level of athleticism that he was before that play happened. And I'm not sure the answer is yes.
I don't know. I think that the whole thing with LeBron, he's supposed to be like this athletic freak. Like, he's still playing at this high level at 36. You would, like, maybe if he tore his Achilles, maybe if he tore his ACL, broke a bone, something like that. I'm almost a little disappointed that it's going to be a high ankle sprain that brings down LeBron James. Like, shouldn't it be something more than that that takes him down?
Well, it's like with Achilles. No one would have thought some dinky little shot to the back would take him out, and all of a sudden, you know, there goes this Greek
figure. We now have an understanding that the Achilles, whatever it is, tendon, is very hard to heal. The science tells us an ankle sprain, well, painful, certainly.
It would certainly be disappointing to see this indestructible athlete go down in such underwhelming fashion.
That's my point.
But I don't think that he's saying that my career is going to be over. I'm going to have to retire after next
season. Right. He's saying I'm not going to be 100%.
This
99%.
This may have knocked him down a peg.
He's going to be
a small peg, a quick drop. If you blink, you miss it, but it might reduce it. And I think it's one of those things where if you go back and watch LeBron on Miami, you're reminded of what the drop off is athletically from where he was then to now. Whereas you watch him still be one of the top players in the league, and it's hard to appreciate that this guy has actually lost a considerable amount of his athletic powers.
Fair enough. Again, it's just for me, it comes back to this is the great LeBron James. And it's a high ankle sprain that stops him from ever being 100% again. I thought he was more of a warrior than that. And then there was this one. This one's a little more interesting. And Jake Asman, actually, who hosts the morning show on this network right here, and my one-time college roommate, oddly enough, Jake Asman
Shout out Ithaca College.
Shout out Circle 1806. Jake Asman pointing this out so LeBron James today comes out and says whoever came up with the play-in tournament should be fired. And I don't believe, Bobby, correct me if I'm wrong, that the Lakers are in danger of the play-in.
They are.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
They have the same record as the Blazers.
Yeah, and the Mavericks. So there's from 5 to 7, there's a tie here.
Depending on the team, there's only 7 or 8 games left in the season. So it's getting spicy. The Blazers are getting hot. They've won 4 in a row.
I like the Blazers.
And so, yeah, that was a slugfest the other night against the Celtics at the Garden. And so it is funny, though, Alex, that Luka Doncic, Dallas Mavericks look like they're going to be in the play-in tournament. He starts complaining about it. Mark Cuban voices his, he's against it. Now LeBron does it with the Lakers having to be concerned about it. It's just funny how that works.
Well,
the play-in tournament is great for business. It's great to give more fan bases a reason to continue watching the regular season. The issue here is that they have jammed the schedule together because the media powers that they are connected to want the season done before the Olympics starts. So if it's Game 7, it's right before the Olympics begins. So the problem here is that these teams are not getting a break. It's every other night. It's constant travel and on down the line. So you get injuries, you get rest, and it's not working out. It's had a major impact on some of the most prominent teams in the league. That's the issue. The play-in tournament is a great idea, and people are looking real salty when they get close to it.
I think the problem is you see the idea of the play-in, and with the owners, the players, all of them, and I don't fault them for this. They see the money that it's going to bring in, and they get all excited without considering, that might be us.
It never crossed LeBron's mind in the offseason.
Somebody has to plan it. So here's the quote that Jake Asman brought back today. This is from about a year ago. I'm going to actually, let me, well, this just says late 2020. I don't have the exact date, but I'm going to guess this is before, here's the exact date. Oh, it was slightly after the shutdown, but here's LeBron's quote, late March 2020. Quote, you got Portland, you got Memphis, New Orleans and Sacramento tinkering around there. So if there's 5 or 10 games left, why not let those guys battle it out? Make them play each other all 5 games. So not quite the same thing as a play-in tournament, but some people have cited those comments and that concept as the genesis for this play-in tournament. And again, you know, and this, again, it goes beyond LeBron. I'm just using LeBron as the jumping off point here, but you mentioned Mark Cuban, who is a very powerful owner in this league and definitely had some sway when it came into the play-in tournament. It's all well and good to make the money, but you have to be willing to play those games. And I've said this as a Celtics fan, right? The play-in tournament, you think about a team like the New York Knicks. You think about a team like the Sacramento Kings, who hasn't made the playoffs in, what is it, 14 years, 17 years, whatever it is, right?
Yep, longest drought in the NBA.
Sure. The Charlotte Hornets, right? The B-list of the NBA. The Boston Celtics, the pinnacle right there with the Lakers of the NBA, playing in a play-in tournament?
Might get them both in there.
Well, what I've said is, you know, if I'm the Celtics, that's the NIT. And, you know, the Celtics are the equivalent of like Duke or Kentucky or Kansas. They don't play in the NIT. If they have a down year, they just chalk it up as a loss and move on. Maybe some of these teams, maybe LeBron, maybe the Celtics, maybe whoever, some of these blue bloods, you know, if you're the Kings, you absolutely take it. But maybe some of these blue bloods say, yeah, we're declining your invitation. We're not participating in the tournament. We don't do the NIT. We're the Boston Celtics. We're the Los Angeles Lakers. We don't do play-ins. You either give us a spot or we're going home.
And I'll do you one more. This is the sport, this is the league, where upsets almost never happen because
right.
It's a best-of-7 series. But a one game, you're the Boston Celtics, a blue blood franchise. You might lose to the Washington Wizards and pack your bags before the real playoffs get going. So, you're the Los Angeles Lakers, and you run into a team like Luka Doncic in the Dallas Mavericks, or you know, you run into Dame, you run into a Steph Curry in Fuego performance, you might find yourself going home.
So, and we had this conversation last time we were on together. I think this was like 2 weeks ago. Because something you just said, the real playoffs. You might get eliminated before the real playoffs. We have this conversation with baseball all the time in the wild card. That you don't really make the playoffs if you get to the play-in tournament and lose. That should not count as a real playoff berth.
Exactly. The Sacramento Kings didn't hold on to Harrison Barnes through the deadline just to get into the play-in tournament, lose and go home.
I don't care. It's not if they lose and go home, they didn't make the playoffs. And you can
agreed.
You can want to wipe the streak all you want. In my mind, that streak will absolutely still exist.
You reached the postseason, you didn't get to the playoffs.
I like that. That's interesting. You're in the postseason, but it's not a playoff appearance.
There are levels to this.
You might be into something there. So the postseason drought ends, but the playoff drought does not.
Continues.
I think, obviously, unless it's football, I think part of what's so great about playoffs is their series is it's the battle in night in and night out. You're going back and forth, whether it be baseball, hockey, basketball. What we all love Game 7, but part of what's so great about Game 7 and the win and go home is all of the bad blood that was built up through games 1 and 6. Don't get me wrong. I love win or go home games. I do love the baseball wild card game, but it doesn't feel like a playoff game because you don't get that build up. You don't get that momentum. It just happens and then it's done.
The play-in tournaments were created to put a fresh spin on these sports, on these leagues, to make more money. So really, if you're one of those teams,
it was more that second one for sure.
One drives the other. And so if you're in the play-in tournament, what you got is a charity handout. That's your gift. To continue your season, to, you know, if you're the home team at least, to get a little more revenue generated. And so that's what you're accepting. That's what you're moving on to. But you're not reaching the real playoffs when in these sports, like you said, different than the NFL, for instance, when you don't get to a series,
right. Football's different.
You didn't get to the playoffs.
Football's different because you can build bad blood right away and you just – I don't know how football series would work. It's just not conducive to the sport. But – I do want to get into some of those teams who could be in the playoff tournament. I want to get into some of the other storylines around the NBA. Some very, very interesting reports out of Cleveland, a player I really like, Bobby. You're going to have to tell me if I should still like this player or if it's time for me to change my mind. We will get into that on the other side. You are listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. It's Alex Barth and Bobby Krivitsky in for Anthony Pepe tonight. We're talking off the air here some of our favorite NBA trash talking stories. With Michael Jordan counting down from, what was it, 60, 62?
Yep, started at 62. First shot of the game goes 60, next one 58.
What was the significance of 62 and not 60?
You'd have to ask MJ that. I mean,
that's like a weird, I'm sure he had a reason, but that's like, 60's an accomplishment. I don't know where the two comes from. Maybe just because he could, I don't know. My personal favorite, Paul Pierce, Al Harrington, right? Early 2000s
classic
playoff game. I've never heard any trash talking like this. So this is from Joe Varden of The Athletic. Quote, this was earlier today. Various Cavs players, Cleveland Cavaliers here, various Cavs players still grow frustrated by the way Colin Sexton dominates the ball. And opponents taunt them by saying during games, you know he's not going to pass you the ball. First off, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's rough to live with, and it'll get under your skin real quick, as if the actual issue taking place isn't bad enough to have guys on the other team calling it out to your face in the middle of a game is tough to deal with.
As if, you know, playing on a 21-43 team to begin with, and are you motivated to move off the ball after you hear that?
And you might not be. There are plenty of guys that don't in situations like that. But here's the other thing. The Cavaliers stink. And Colin Sexton's averaging 4.1 assists per game. So you want to be upset that a score-first point guard is taking 18.5 shots and hogging the ball? Fine. He's also distributing it to a respectable degree.
So here's what I wanted to ask you. And there's a couple players on the Cavs I do like. I think Jared Allen, that was a good pickup for them, is a good player. But that is more so a defensive rebounding. Like, I don't know that I'm looking at him to score a ton of points. I'm not looking for my point guard to constantly feed him the ball. He's averaging 14 a game. Darius Garland's a nice pickup. He's still, despite Colin Sexton not
passing
the ball,
probably where most of those assists are going.
Right, is averaging 18. But the real question is, I mean, you look up and down this roster for the most part, who's Colin Sexton supposed to pass the ball to?
And he's still generating 4.1 assists per game.
Right. Who is it that's like, man, if only I got my shots up, we'd be 500. Like, who is it on the Cavs roster? Maybe there's guys who think that. But who can legitimately make that claim? I mean, is it Dante Exum? I know he was a high pick. Yogi Ferrell, these are guys people have been excited about. But Colin Sexton's the best player on that team. He should have the ball in his hands most of the time. It's a superstar league.
It's Sexton and Garland. They're getting along just fine in the backcourt. That's really all that Cleveland cares about is those two and Jared Allen, like you said. Everyone else could be gone this offseason. You know, Kevin Love, face it, he's coming to the end of the road. So maybe he's frustrated. He's not getting as many touches as he'd like, but I don't think Colin Sexton is all that bothered that Kevin Love's not getting the amount of touches he's accustomed to.
Right. You know, I'm sorry. You know, they want the Cavs are frustrated that Sexton dominates the ball. Meanwhile, Kevin Love, that pass in air quotes over the weekend. Did you see this one where he just knocks the ball inbounds, lets it get stolen and stands there? That dude's just cashing. And, you know, he's had a heck of a career. He can absolutely cash checks. He has no, what does he want to play for this team for? Easter's cat, like,
it's his fault. He didn't have to sign that extension. I never blame someone for taking the money.
Sure.
But now to turn around and sulk, you knew what you signed up for.
Right. This is who Colin Sexton is supposed to pass the ball to, Bobby. So as a Colin Sexton fan, just simply because I am generally an Alabama, I root for Alabama teams, and obviously one of the better Alabama basketball players of the last 5-10 years, I'm team Colin Sexton on this one. Am I wrong?
To a degree, this is not me reporting this, but it's already been discussed. I'm confident in predicting that the front office or the coaching staff, whoever's close to Colin Sexton in that franchise, has discussed the matter with him, because when it gets to the public like this, it came from players on the Cavaliers to Joe Varden.
What do you say to call, what is the discussion? Is it, hey, pass the ball, or is it, hey, keep doing you, like,
no,
ignore them, you're doing the right thing?
Look, ideally, for him to reach another level, he needs to be a more effective distributor of the ball. Now, those 4.1 assists are mighty impressive, but they don't tell the whole story. You have to see the context of it. And when you have a piece of information like this and a player who's a score-first mentality, it's what's gotten him this far, eighth pick in the league a couple of years ago. they're going to work with him on, hey, make sure you spread the ball around. We see with the Celtics sometimes where some reports start to come to light about friction with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, for instance, and then all of a sudden they're sharing the ball more. And so things of this nature are just part of working in that business and playing in the league, and I guarantee that people have talked to him about it, and I would expect, not always, but I would expect a positive response from Sexton.
Well, here's what I would say if I'm calling Sexton. You want me to pass the ball more? Get me somebody worth passing the ball to. Right? Like, how can you ask him to pass the ball when that's the roster?
He's not a reserved guy either. There's a great piece on Damian Lillard starting to get frustrated with himself that he hasn't put more pressure on the Blazers front office to be more aggressive in past off seasons. Colin Sexton once chewed out Penny Hardaway's kid to Penny Hardaway in the middle of the game and told him, your son is trash. So he clearly knows the Cavs need more talent. He's not one to bite his tongue.
So that, again, that's what it comes down to me, is if I'm him and they come to me and say, hey, pass the ball, I say to who? And you know,
he'd be right.
Right,
he'd...
and Darius, fine. Yeah, I'll pass the ball to Darius, and me and him will play 2-on-5. And that's what we'll do, and Jarrett will contribute when he contributes, and Kevin Love can stand
but
in the inbound spot. And...
treat it like practice then, where, you know, when a coach comes in and wants to establish his system, even though he doesn't have the right guys for it yet to be up and running, treat it like that, Colin Sexton. Go ahead and work on your court vision and your ability to read different things the defense is throwing at you. And even if that guy doesn't make the shot, know that you made the right play.
So correct me if I'm wrong here. I think – so the NBA does a better job maybe than most sports. There's teams who are just universally likable. And regardless of who you're a fan of, you'll root for this team. The Suns are certainly in that category, I think. But for me, for a couple years now, the most universally likable team in the NBA has been the Portland Trail Blazers, because they have maybe the most universally likable player, just an electric player in Damian Lillard. That being said, and you kind of just alluded to this, not by Damian Lillard's own fault, but they really haven't been able to do much. They had a cool run last year in the bubble, but didn't ultimately amount to anything in the playoffs. Is it like my team, I'm assuming, is the Celtics, right? I'm assuming I'm getting a playoff round, maybe two from them. So I'm looking for, okay, who am I attaching myself to for the rest of the playoffs? Are we going to get an actual run from the Portland Trail Blazers this year? Because they look like a special team at times.
They're hot right now. I don't buy into the idea that the Lakers, as bad as it looks at the moment, and LeBron James out tonight because he re-aggravated that ankle injury.
99%.
I don't think that he – I just don't see the Lakers ending up in the play-in tournament, even though the Blazers – are turning their season around. What a difference a week makes. They were awful 7 days ago. Now they're on a four-game win streak. I still think they're the ones who stay in the seventh seed. So, look, they could certainly – they should be the team to come out of that, but Steph Curry's sitting right there as well. The Grizzlies are a deep team that's well-coached, so you never know. The problem with Portland, the NBA is the hardest league to win a championship in, and a huge part of it is that you need not only one of these top-tier superstars – but some major complementary pieces around them. So history says Damian Lillard cannot be the best player on a championship team. And you have guys, the superstars don't want to come to Portland. As enticing as it might be to play with Damian Lillard,
right,
let's go do it somewhere else if we have that opportunity. And the roster around him and CJ McCollum has not been good enough to get this team over the hump. With that said, they did get to the conference finals a couple of years ago.
Right. And here's what's interesting to me about this Portland team, right? So this year especially, teams generally win more at home than on the road, right? Yep. Teams generally have a better record at home than on the road, but it's been exacerbated this year. It probably has something to do with COVID protocols, whatever. I don't know. I'm sure there'll be pieces written about it looking back as we go. But, right, in the Eastern Conference, there's only four teams that have a record above over 500 on the road. The three at the top, and then, oddly enough, the Indiana Pacers are 19-14. The West, kind of the same thing. But the Portland Trailblazers, you ready for this, Bobby? 16-16. They're a 500 team at home. They are 20-12 on the road. They are 8 games over 500 on the road. You know what that team that tells me? This team's got some guts. And I don't think you can count out guts in the playoffs. So, very interesting team, I think.
They're going to need it to come out of the play-in tournament.
They absolutely are. I don't know. I'm still holding out hope. Maybe they, because the Cavs, too, they're tied with the Cavs. They can get up to 5. There's 2 teams there that won't make it. So we will see. All right, we're going to come back on the other side, back to the NFL draft. Dan Shonka will join us from Our Lads. Keep it here. You're listening to the Die Hard on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Alex Barth and Bobby Kravitsky in for Anthony Pepe tonight on the Diehards. We're going to go to the Progressive guest line now. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. From our lads, we are going to welcome in Dan Shonka, who I'm sure, Dan, a busy weekend for you, a fun weekend for you?
Oh, absolutely. The Scout Super Bowl is always a big thrill. You know, after you work on these guys for a year and you find out where they land, it's exciting to find out what fan bases are re-energized.
So before we get into the draft, Dan, I do want to ask you real quick. Ernie Adams, longtime member of the Patriots front office, announced his retirement earlier tonight and obviously has done a lot of work in the scouting community. And he's a guy who nationally has flown under the radar but has been a big part in building a lot of good football teams. I'm just curious your thoughts on Ernie Adams' career.
Oh, he's a legend. Absolutely. Ernie's been well-known throughout the scouting community for years and decades and decades and more years. And so he's always been kind of that guy that, hey, he just is working, keeps his nose to the grindstone, working away and helping build those Patriots from another angle. Obviously, Bill Belichick is out front, but, you know, Nick Caserio and then Ernie Adams, who's kind of, I think Ernie was always really, I mean, basically Coach Belichick's right-hand man. So, you know, but he'll be missed, and he's earned a very good retirement, and he's got a handful of rings to prove it.
Dan, you mentioned fan bases feeling rejuvenated, reinvigorated after the draft that their favorite team had. I think that certainly describes Chicago Bears fans after they traded up to get Justin Fields. How do you see his fit in Matt Nagy's offense?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I think that one thing, they better let this guy play and get him, you know, get him a little, salt him away a little bit early here, but get him on the field and let him do his thing because, you know, it always bothered me. I don't know how Nagy is going to you know, Trubisky, I tell you what, I think Mitchell Trubisky still has a chance to rejuvenate himself, and it kind of bothered me that Nagy was supposed to be a quarterback whisperer, and I never saw a lot of whispers there, and you know, I worry a little bit about, you know, Justin, but I think that, he'll overcome coaching and be a great player. He'll fit. He'll bring a different dimension, obviously, with his ability to run and throw. And he can open things up. It puts more pressure on a defense, a guy that's got the ability to take off and run for a touchdown on any play. I'm sure that defenses are going to have a spy on him right away because you can't let him out of the box. He drops back and everybody's covered and he takes off to run. You got a running back running open down the field. So, I think that, they've got to be able to structure some offense around, not just what Nagy was used to playing with, but really structure that offense around the strengths of Justin Fields.
You, when we talked to you last week, Dan, you were very high on Mac Jones. And now we know he's going to New England. He is like Cam Newton was the next guy, but he's really the next guy for Tom Brady. And a lot of the question in New England isn't necessarily if he can be the next guy. It's how soon can we find out? When can we see him on the field? How soon do you believe Mac Jones in that complex Patriots system can kind of get in there and make an impact on Sundays?
You know, I'm not so sure Mac Jones hasn't been studying the New England offense and the nuances before he even got drafted.
Oh, he had. He actually told us after the draft he had been.
Yeah, I was going to say that he said this is where I wanted to go, you know.
Right.
And so I think that hey, he's a brilliant guy. He's that guy that can make week to week adjustments that the New England Patriots offense and defense require in their players. I think he's going to get on the field sooner than later, whether it's because of an injury to Cam Newton. But Mac Jones is going to get that engine revving again, and the consistency that he brings and the accuracy he'll bring to that offense is the difference between, hey, we saw what happened last year with New England, just with all those players that opted out, all the injuries, all that, and they were still within striking distance of doing some things. Well, now you get a consistent quarterback back there that isn't going to throw touchdown or throw touchdowns for the other team, interceptions and that go for touchdowns. Mac Jones is going to be starting sooner than later.
Dan, I'm going to give you a real easy softball here. Who's one of those teams who had one of the better drafts, in your opinion?
Gosh, I'll tell you, I don't want to sing to the choir too much in the division, but I tell you, Miami, I thought, had an outstanding draft. I thought the Chargers had a tremendous draft. A lot of the teams with new general managers and head coaches, and I mean, Denver knocked out of the park. George Payton did a great job with the Broncos. I thought Atlanta did a real nice job too up there, and Detroit did a lot of good things. I think Urban Meyer, he didn't look like a rookie there in the draft room, and obviously when you're picking the first on every round, you're going to get some good players, but it's always about the selection and how they fit in. I thought Jacksonville did a nice job. So, and the Titans, I thought the Titans made some really good selections. And I know that's talking about a lot of teams. That's just scratching the surface. I think there's, a lot of other teams that are fans. Hey, the New York Giants, Dave Gettleman backing out of there a couple, two or three times, which I used to work with Dave on the road when he was a road scout and everything several years ago. And he was always a very thorough guy, worked hard, and, I thought he did some good things. He could teach an old dog new tricks. That old dog, he backed out of there about three times and helped his team a whole lot. So, I could probably darn near give, an A-B to just almost every organization. The Patriots, I like Barmore. They grabbed Barmore in there, and if he plays to like he did the last four or five games of his career, he was a dominant player. And then you get a pass rusher like Perkins in there, and so I think that they did some good things, and besides Mac Jones, to fit in and plug in different spots that they needed to patch some holes in their offense and defense.
So you mentioned the Dolphins briefly, and we saw this trend where teams that just needed help on offense, teams with young quarterbacks who needed help, chose skill position players over the offensive line, right? We saw the Dolphins and the Bengals choose receivers over Penei Sewell. How do you feel about that strategy? Do you think that, that was the right move, or should they have gone all out in protecting their young quarterbacks with the generational tackle prospect?
Well, I think the thing that they had to determine, say, for instance, like Cincinnati,
right?
Do we want to take an annual Pro Bowler guy, or do we want to take a very possible Hall of Fame caliber receiver? And we understand, and Joe Burrow went into the office, I'm sure, on crutches and crawled up on the table and hopped on one leg up and down that he wanted, Jamar Chase. So they say, well, that other leg might be going next year if we don't get a blocker. But what they did is they did a nice job getting Jackson Carmen later. We had him late first round. It was so loaded with offensive tackles this year. I think more were drafted this year than any year in the past. So there was a lot of depth there. I think that's the reason they went that route. Let's go ahead and take that tackle, or excuse me, take that that speed receiver, that big-time receiver. Then we'll get that tackle in our second pick. So that's what Cincinnati did. And then Miami, hey, you can't fault them for having an electric super speed guy. He'll be one of the fastest guys in the NFL in Waddle. And he brings a different dimension. He's electric on returns. He can kickoff return. He's a big time punt return guy. And when he gets his hands on it underneath, you better hold on to your britches, because here he comes. He could take it to the house.
Which player were you the most surprised to see go undrafted?
Oh, undrafted? Not,
yeah.
I mean, well, I tell you, the thing this year, there's so many guys that kind of slid out of there. Obviously, you know, I liked Dylan Moses,
sure.
You know, but see, a lot of those guys had medicals or, you know, something. I mean, they're talented players, but, you know, Alaric Jackson from Iowa was another one that he fell out of the draft. At one time, like, we had him in the fifth round, somewhere in there. But he was really, you know, a guy like him, he was very close to Tristan Wirf 4 years ago at Iowa, and Wirf accelerated up, and then Alaric had injuries and kind of leveled off and dropped a little bit. So there's always, you know, something behind. And then there's guys that, you know, maybe character things or something like that that cost them the drop. But most of the time, those really good players like that drop out of the draft, it's injury.
So if you're on the clock, right, and it's the seventh round, and there's a guy like Dylan Moses, and I think everybody agreed, supremely talented player, how bad does the injury situation have to be? Or why not, you know, with that seventh round pick, you're taking a flyer on guys there anyway. Why don't teams use their seventh round pick more on guys like that?
Hey, it's absolutely baffling to me. Well, another guy is Marvin Wilson from you know, Florida State. This
yeah.
guy here 2 years ago was a war dog. I mean, here's a 6'5", 320-pound defensive tackle that dominated. And then this year he got agentitis, or, you know, ate too many pierogies or something, because he got, you know, he got overweight, and then he wasn't the same guy. And his was a different deal, you know, wasn't necessarily injury, but it was something else. So I think that, what teams do, it baffles me sometimes that they'll actually pay more for a free agent than if they just drafted him in the seventh round, you know? And so I'm kind of with you. I mean, like Dylan Moses, hey, yeah, pull the string, grab him in the, unless he, you know, maybe he, the doctors or the physicians of these different teams say, well, you know, he had a real bad degenerative knee, and, you know, if it ends up being a free agent, then you're not out much money, but you just couldn't pay him to draft him.
Dan, are there any prospects who you feel better about their chances to add value at the next level because of the team that picked them and the situation they're going into?
Oh, yeah, there's always, I tell you what, there's horses for courses. Obviously, Matt Jones, you know, feel great about him. Like Eric Stokes out at Green Bay, they've been looking for corners forever. And he's a guy from Georgia, corner, that's really a good football player that I would expect him to ascend. Najee Harris from Alabama, he went to the right spot. The Steelers it hurt them not having a good running game last year. Now they brought a hammer in there, and he's going to chisel away at yards. And they've got, and they also drafted a couple linemen that are a lot better than people think. So they're going to be, you know, an AFC team to deal with this year, as they always are. You know, Trey Lance, he very well went in the right spot, because he can run with the ball. He's given a different dimension to a Kyle Shanahan offense. I thought Mac Jones would go there because of his consistency and all, and everything that Kyle Shanahan wants. But now Trey Lance just gives a little bit other dimension. He's not as accurate. His ball placement isn't as good, but he does run better than Mac when he pulls the ball down. And even though this is a passing league, I think that the San Francisco is a run-oriented offense, and they felt like, hey, we'll throw a little RPO, stuff like that in there. So Trey Lance went exactly to where he could have gone a lot of places, But there he went. He went to a spot that's going to feature him and where he could end up being a star. Obviously, Kyle Pitts to Atlanta. I mean, that he's going to help, you know, move that right along. So there's quite a few guys that will have. I tell you, I thought Buffalo did a nice job grabbing two big tackles, long tackles, and two defensive guys on the end, because their roster is really strong, and so now they just needed to add to it a little bit. And then Carolina grabbing J.C. Horn was another one that I thought was a real good pick. They needed a corner in the worst way, and J.C. Horn is a very physical, he's just got a great demeanor and swag about him to be a corner in the NFL, and so that was a good pick.
Dan Shonka from OwlAds.com, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back on the other side.
This is the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Final segment of the Diehards tonight on SportsMap Radio Network. Alex Barth, Bobby Krivitsky. Bobby, anything we didn't get to tonight you want to let the people know about?
I think we covered it all. You know, unless people want to hear about the Bruins being 9-2 since acquiring Taylor Hall. We got the Derby. We got fashion at the draft, NBA, NFL. I think we hit on it all.
Carmelo Anthony, actually, he did hit some scoring mark tonight. Number 10 all-time on the scoring list. I love Carmelo Anthony. Always
Syracuse
been a
guy.
Fan.
Brought us our only championship. So
congratulations,
you know,
to Carmelo Anthony. That feels like a strong note to land on. Diehards will be back tomorrow night, 8 o'clock Eastern. Until then, for Bobby Krivitsky, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening. Have a great night, everybody.